Chapter 7. A Drive in the Country. After 7 or 8 miles, I reached the place that I was looking for, the little wood with the only trees in the area. I stopped, took out the gun, and jumped out of the car. I left the driver's door open, on the same side as the trees, and ran the other way into a field. Then, I lay down on the ground and waited. I saw the brown Buick coming. The two men got out, and one of them went into the woods. The other guy was right in front of me, on the ground behind his car. They were sure that I was in the woods. It was the obvious place to hide. The other man came out of the woods after about 5 minutes, his gun out in front of him. He came over to the Buick, and the other man stood up. They were standing with their backs to me. I shot them both in the back. 2 quick shots. They fell, their faces up against the trees. I went to look at them, and I thought about Joe. Then, I took the keys out of their car and opened the back, thinking that I might find something in there. Guns, maybe, or knives. But I didn't. I found Spivey, shot through the head. They were killing everyone who made a mistake. I put the two dead guys and their guns in the back of the car with Spivey. Then, I locked the car and put the keys in my pocket. I drove back to Margrave as the sun was going down. I took the gun with me and went inside the station. Roscoe was the only one still there. She couldn't go home. "We'll go to a hotel in Atlanta," I told her, taking her in my arms. "One near the airport." I had a plan. But first, I told her what happened at the wood. "We can't count them in Hubble's 10. The two guys in the Buick were outside help. And Spivey couldn't be on the inside either. He was too stupid. I need you to drive me back there now," I said, and I explained my plan. It was dark when we reached the little wood. I got out. Roscoe drove away, and I drove the Buick to Atlanta Airport. There were thousands of cars at the airport, and I left it there and locked it. I went into the toilets in the airport building and threw the keys away. Then I got a bus to meet Roscoe at the hotel. "Right, let's go to Sherman Stoller's," I said. "We wanted to find Judy, the woman who gave Stoller his watch." When we got to the house, an old woman came to the door.
"Sherman bought a new house 2 years ago,
the woman said. An old man appeared behind her.
"It's a beautiful house. Our boy Sherman did really well," the man said.
They gave us the address, which was about 5 miles away, along a new road with all new buildings. It looked expensive. "How could a truck driver pay for this?" I asked Roscoe.
"Not without help," she answered.
We found the house, and a blonde woman of about 30 came to the door.
"Are you Judy?"
Roscoe asked, showing her police badge. The woman nodded.
"Is Sherman dead?"
she said, staring at us.
"Yes, he is,"
Roscoe replied.
"I'm very sorry." "That's what happens when you do bad things," Judy said.
Roscoe questioned her about Stoller, but Judy didn't know anything.
"He never told me much," she said, "but I know that man was trouble. He stole 2 air conditioners. I'll show you."
Judy took us down to the garage, where there were 2 big boxes against the wall. Each had Island Air Conditioning and a long handwritten number on it. Both boxes were empty.
"He drove air conditioners down to Florida. I'll show you a picture," she said, as we went back upstairs.
She took out a book of photos.
"That's his truck,"
she said, pointing at a photo. But I wasn't looking at the truck. I was looking at a man in the background. It was Paul Hubble. Behind him, there was part of a metal building and a tall dead tree.
"That's Sherman's boss,"
Judy said.
"Can we keep this photo?"
Roscoe asked.
"I don't want it," Judy said. "I'm going to forget that I ever knew him."
Out in the car, Roscoe pointed at the photo.
"That's Kleiner's warehouse," she said. "I know that tree."
I woke up early in the hotel, thinking about Joe. Roscoe was already up.
"I spoke to Finley," she said. "Picard has something for us."
We drove to the FBI offices in Atlanta and found Picard.
"It's good to meet you," he said to Roscoe. "Finley has told me a lot about you."
Roscoe smiled.
"The burned car was rented by Joe Reacher on Thursday evening," Picard went on. "He rented it from his hotel, so we know where he was staying."
"Thanks, Picard. That's great," I said, writing down the name of the hotel.
"No problem, my friend," he said.
Roscoe and I hurried off to find Joe's hotel. At the front desk, Roscoe showed her police badge and asked about Joe Reacher. The man on the desk checked his computer.
"The room is empty," he said. "His things were taken out on Saturday. They'll be downstairs."
He took us down to a woman in a small office.
"We need to see the things that were taken out of room 621 on Saturday,"
Roscoe said.
"He came and got them already,"
the woman said. I went cold. We were too late.
"Who came to get them?"
Roscoe asked.
"When?" "The man from room 621,
the woman said.
"This morning, around 9.
"Who was he?" I asked her. She looked in a book.
"Joe Reacher," she said. "He wrote his name in the book, and he took his things."
"What did he look like?" I asked her.
"Little guy with dark hair. He had a nice smile."
"What did he take?" She checked the book again and showed us. Clothes, 2 pairs of shoes, a suit bag, a wash bag, a briefcase. I thought hard. How did someone get here before us?